Hey everybody, it's Ed from When Doves Podcast. Quick note about today's episode. We did run into a little bit of technical problems when recording the pod, some internet issues. We tried to minimize those as much as possible. However, there are going to be a few moments here and there where we're going to sound a little robotic. We tried to minimize those so they weren't too disruptive, but wanted to give you that heads up. It's not you, it's us. So please enjoy today's episode. Thanks.
All right, Ed, let me ask you a question. Now, you have said that you were interested in trying to maintain an accent throughout an episode of the pod. Is that correct?
That's correct, Jared, yes.
And is what accent are you doing now?
I'm doing a faux kind of British posh, but then it kind of goes back into something else, into Monty Python, into... various things, you know, but I think there's a nice kind of musicality to the accent. It's fine.
Is that what you think?
I do. Yes.
Great. Welcome everybody to When Doves Podcast.
Oh, mercy. Okay.
Oh, mercy. No, I'm just playing. Ed was talking about accents before, because Ed's got a new obsession, everybody. What's it, Clem? What's his name?
Yeah, here we go. This is going to be hard. So, yeah, I don't know how this came up on a YouTube feed for me. Our international listeners might be way more familiar with this. There's a BBC program. I believe it's called, the first series is called Toast of London. Then it becomes Toast of Tinseltown when he comes to Hollywood to do some work. It's a comedy, and it is absolutely, I say this, it's brilliant. I haven't watched one episode. I've only watched clips of the episodes, but they crack me up. I was saying to Jared, if you guys are familiar with that series, I came on the Zoom today with him, and I was like, Jared, this is Clem Fandango. Can you hear me? If you don't know the reference, search it, enjoy it, laugh heartily. It'll make your day.
Clem Fandango. That's on my agenda post-pod recording to look at Clem Fandango.
Clem Fandango.
But we're not here to talk about Clem Fandango. That's going to be later. We're here to talk about how two things. One, how your Philadelphia Phillies have the best record in baseball. Casty.
Yep.
Ed's wearing a shirt that says Cat. Ed's all decked out in Phillies gear right now.
I am. I'm overdecked.
Overdecked. I'm going to the game.
Oh, you are?
Yep. Here's what's even nicer. I got free tickets from someone.
Oh, you did?
Yes, and preferred parking pass. Wow, Ed's mad.
I did not know. Who's going with you, may I ask?
Christy has to go. I know.
And I think your wife's getting in the way of our friendship.
Well, I didn't want to say it here on the air, but...
All right, maybe we should move on to another topic.
We're moving on to our other topic. Our other topic today is we're here to discuss the only studio album by... this act, who in a way loom large in Prince's legend. Ed, who are we talking about today?
Oh, sure. Apollonia 6, of course. Looming very large.
Apollonia 6, looming very large. Ed, what do you remember about this record when it came out?
Nothing. You know, it's...
Nothing.
No, I don't. I mean, it's funny. With all the craziness and all the wonder of Purple Rain and everything that was going on with it, I wasn't particularly worried about the Apollonia 6 music or the Dez Quick, though Modern Air was kind of a whatever thing in the movie, you know, any song that was featured or just kind of touched upon in the movie. I wasn't worried about the Apollonia 6 side. I wasn't. And to be honest with you, I know I'm jumping your facts and figures, so please forgive me. I would have thought this album was made in advance of the Purple Rain movie. So I was completely shocked to hear it wasn't. Which we'll get into in facts and figures. So that's how much I don't remember much of this album at all. But, it didn't. Sex Shooter, sure. No, because it was featured in the movie, but it didn't make me want to go out and get the album. I wasn't blown away by it.
Yeah, I also have no memory of the record except for Sex Shooter because of Purple Rain. But much like Vanity 6, this was a one and done kind of deal.
Yeah.
We just, Apollonia 6 released one record as an album and then that was it. But we'll get into that just now. I guess we might as well do a little facts and figures. Should we do it now?
Let's just get right into it. Let we do some Apollonia 6 facts and figures. Apollonia 6 facts and figures. Jala, could you bring the facts and figures, please?
Apollonia 6 facts and figures. You know, was that one of our better facts and figures intros? I feel like it might have been.
Because we threw a little British in there. I think it made it, it tightened it up.
Apollonia 6. Apollonia 6 is the only studio album by Apollonia 6. It was initially supposed to be the second release from Vanity 6. But then, as we know, as we covered last week, Vanity departed Prince's sort of universe. And Prince hired Apollonia Cotero and changed the name from Vanity 6 to Apollonia 6. It features the vocals of Apollonia and Brenda and Susan, who are in Vanity 6. Now, I'll say briefly, Susan's only on one track on this record.
That is true.
Yeah, and the album cover, and that's it. The album spawned one sort of hit, the aforementioned Sex Shooter. It was released on October 1st, 1984, to your point, Ed, after Purple Rain had come out. It was recorded from December 83 to March 84. So again, another quick turnaround for Prince. It could have come out Purple Rain time, but it makes me wonder. I mean, this is maybe, I don't know if I'm jumping on something by throwing this speculation out now, but it does make me wonder if the idea was that this was going to sort of even further prolong the Purple Rain reign, so to speak.
I have a totally different take on it. I think.
Okay, great. Great.
Yeah. You want me to talk about it now? Sure, I'll talk about it. It makes me think that just because that it wasn't... first of all, I think he really had, of course, originally envisioned this to be a Vanity 6 involvement and Vanity being involved in Purple Rain. She said, goodbye, I don't want to do this work with you. I'm going off to Hollywood to do my own thing. Then they scrambled to get Apollonia. And Apollonia was very much upfront with Prince that she had no desire to be in a band. Long term, like she was like, I'll do the movie. I want to do the movie. I'll do the associated music if you need it for the sake of the movie. But beyond that, no interest at all. I'm an actor first and foremost, a singer not so much.
I think that's a very good take.
So my thought is, Jared, that after Purple Rain became a smash hit, I'm wondering if Warner said to him, "Hey, man, you might as well release a package with some Apollonia 6 songs on because the movie's doing great. Your soundtrack's doing great. The time's doing great. Why not put a companion piece out? You must have some material sitting out there to do, right? To throw an album together for Apollonia 6. We'll help you. You know, we'll promote it." So
that's
what I'm thinking. I think it was an afterthought, honestly.
Could be. Yeah, that could be. Let's see here. What was I about to say? Okay, so the album was released on vinyl and cassette. There wasn't a CD version until 1990 and released only in Japan, the CD.
Wow.
Warner Brothers finally did release it on CD a few years after that, but it's never been made available on digital or streaming.
Right.
And since then, it's been out of print. It's hard to find. It's hard to track down this record, actually. It did okay on the charts. It made it up to 62 on the Billboard 200.
Yeah,
it made it to 24 on the R&B charts. It's the album is 34 minutes and 5 seconds in length. Of course, it was Warner Brothers, produced by Prince, as of course the Star Company, Jamie Star, alter ego. There were two singles. Now, one of them was Sex Shooter, as we already said. Ed, how well do you think Sex Shooter did on the Hot 100? What would you guess?
I think I might have looked this up kind of, so I'm cheating a little bit. It didn't do particularly great. Was it in the 60s?
80s.
80s. So it did even worse than I was thinking. Okay.
But it did better on the dance charts, which makes sense.
Yeah.
It made it to 7 on the dance charts. That sort of tracks. And then there was one other single. What do you think?
It was Blue Limousine.
It was Blue Limousine, which did not chart at all. That was released in March of 85.
Yeah. And that was a Brenda lead. Well, we'll get there, but that was a Brenda.
Exactly. It's been considered that one of the other reasons that this album didn't do anything was that Apollonia 6 didn't tour. They, as you said, they didn't tour in support of the project. And yeah, Apollonia had made it clear she didn't want to be part of the band long term. And then she said this back in 2019. This is according to Ultimate Prince, that site we've referenced before. Apollonia said this, quote, "Prince and I never dated. We're family. We were friends. There's a different type of respect that he had for me. He had that for me for 33 years. We had our difficulties and I always stood up to him. I believe that's what he respected, that I wasn't a pushover. I said no to him for a lot of reasons professionally."
There you go.
There you go. By 1985, Apollonia 6 had disbanded. Yep. Apollonia kept her singing and acting career going, such as it was. She had a lengthy guest spot on Falcon Crest. Remember that TV show?
I do remember her being on Falcon Crest.
And then she did release a solo album in 1988 called Apollonia, which produced three singles. And then she wrote an open letter on Facebook when Prince died in 2016. And she said this, quote, "You told me all of your plans for me, for Apollonia 6. I was so excited because you were going to bring me back to Paisley Park to see the finished Purple Rain room with our images and murals painted on the walls," she wrote. "You wanted to celebrate with Apollonia 6 and present to us our platinum albums. I will never forget you."
Yeah.
So Ed, let's talk about who was on this record.
Yeah.
Who are the personnel? So we have Apollonia, Brenda, and Susan, as we mentioned. Woo. Apollonia sings lead on three tracks. Brenda's lead on three tracks. Susan, as aforementioned, is only the only on one track at all.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to. Prince, of course, plays everything else. Piano, guitars, bass. Drums, Linn drum machine, all that stuff, keyboards. And then we essentially have the revolution on the record. We have Wendy and Susanna Melvoin. We have Sheila E. We have Lisa Coleman. We have Brown Mark. We have Jill Jones all popping up on this record all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm sure, well, I don't want to jump ahead of my own thoughts, but there's something about that presence, I think, adds to the record. A few reviews.
Let's hear them.
Now, much like last week, I found Rolling Stone Album Guide's rating, but I couldn't find the review.
Okay.
So they only gave it 1.5 stars.
Oh, tough. Wow. And that's out of 4 or 5?
Out of 5. They do 5 stars. That's pretty bad.
It's a little low, man.
It's a little low. Yeah. All Music, who we've referenced before.
Love All Music.
All Music had this to say, quote, "Apollonia Cotero replaced Vanity in the group. As Vanity 6 was a potent mix of camp, humor, and sex, Apollonia 6 didn't fare as well. Looks-wise, the trade was even up with Cotero, adding a cute factor as well as a slightly more interesting voice." Shortly before this album was released, Cotero was Prince's duet partner on one of Purple Rain's most enduring tracks, Take Me With You. "Nothing on this effort matches that greatness. The album's first track, Happy Birthday, Mr. Christian, is Apollonia's self-penned sex ditty that tells the tale of a teenaged Apollonia having an affair with her principal." Well, Apollonia didn't write that.
Yeah, I would be surprised. Yeah.
That's not correct. "If anything, the track is a little too PG compared to Vanity 6's escapades. The horny synth-laden sex shooter is a little better and has Cotero singing guilty pleasure gems like I Need You to Be My Main Thang, Play Thang, Pillar of Stone. Although Apollonia 6 had everyone from The Revolution and Sheila E. contributing musical ideas on the tracks Blue Limousine and A Million Miles, I Love You, the lyrics are derivative. The album's last track, In a Spanish Villa, is nothing but ocean sounds, Wendy Melvoin's guitars, and Apollonia's speaking in one of her native tongues. While Prince's production company produced this effort, this effort caught him at a time when he was becoming a more quote-unquote serious artist, and he offered none of his A tracks. Apollonia 6 had a disappointing chart run, but further inspection has made this a viable part of the Minneapolis sound."
Do you think words are better generally if you replace the I's with the A's, like thing and thang, bing and bang? Like, what is it generally better?
Yeah, I think generally it's better. Yeah, okay, if you say thang. Here's a review. This is I don't think I've ever referenced these guys before. The People's Vault.
Is this another communist socialist?
I wish it was. No, this is what the People's Vault had to say about Apollonia 6. Quote, "Overall, the music contained here is more of a consistent and carefully crafted quality to Vanity 6, although it does not have a knockdown killer track like that album does in Nasty Girl. Sex Shooter, a purple funk number in the vein of the post-1999 B-sides, attempts to reach those heights, but does not quite make it. On the album, just as it really starts to gather steam, the song immediately transitions to Blue Limousine, an enjoyable song with a somewhat sad lyric. A Million Miles is an absolute keeper, rounding out an enjoyable sequence of songs. Brenda, of course, in her continued role as vocal anchor of the album, is lead on this particular track. Susan takes lead on Ooh She She Wah Wah, an energetic new wavy number. Some Kind of Lover is more Minneapolis funk of the slow-stopping variety. And here it is evident that Apollonia's voice is rather heavy when compared to Vanity's, which purposely did not do more than she was asked to on the album prior. This does not detract from the album, thankfully. This is not a well-written review. As it was, Apollonia's time with that guy, Prince, was limited to only this album and Purple Rain. Afterwards, she departed to pursue other avenues in her entertainment. As a result, this album was treated much more like a one-off throwaway despite its careful tuning. For example, one song intended for this record was Manic Monday, which found a home with the Bangles. Given its one-off status, this album is incredibly hard to find and goes for ridiculous amounts on the open market, and it has had scant release since its original 84 issue.
Yeah, I mean, listen, well, maybe we get there, but can you imagine this album if tracks were included such as 17 Days, Manic Monday, Take Me With You, or just three tracks potentially on this album? But Prince, I think when Apollonia said, "Hey, I'm not doing this more than one album," he was like, "Well, why am I going to invest my really good material into this thing?" But anyway.
We have a review from our old friend at Goldie's Parade.
Love the Goldies in the Parade.
We love the Goldies in their
love
parade.
It.
They said this quote: "I wrongly underrated Apollonia 6 for the best part of 30 years. Yes, it has its highs and low points, and it is impossible to tell how invested Prince was in this 84 project, what was essentially intended as the second album for Vanity 6. Whereas the lead singer was Sex Shooter due to its eyebrow-raising segment in the movie Purple Rain, there are still highlights of plenty, four to be exact, out of the album's seven tracks, a far higher number than I, for one, originally gave them credit for. Whilst the stockings have aged badly, the good tracks have not. To think that Manic Monday and 17 Days were slated for this record, there is still plenty on offer. Its best track is Happy Birthday, Mr. Christian, which showcases some of Prince's best storytelling in his lyrics. Funny enough, Prince jumped from recording this track right into Purple Rain itself.
He did?
That's what it says.
That can't be accurate. I'm sorry.
Enjoys remarkable provenance and tells of a student's fantasy getting off with their teacher, who rewards the pupil's silence with uncharacteristically good marks. Okay. Prince is also playing the instruments throughout, with occasionally the mighty Sheila E. on drums. Prince's two titillation projects were not taken seriously in music, perhaps unsurprisingly, much unlike the time Prince's greatest side project. Others worthy of honorable mention are A Million Times I Love You, complete with its addictive hook and instrumental section, the radio-friendly Some Kind of Lover, which backed the album's second of its two singles, and fourth worthy track, Blue Limousine.
Gotcha.
So that's Goldie's Parade. And then our friend.
Oh, the Dean. Dean lends the voice. I'm happy. I didn't know he did. That's awesome.
The Dean, you know, he was so invested in Prince in this era. I think anything that was Prince related, he at least gave a listen to. So here's what Bobby C., Robert Christgau, the Dean of American Rock Critics, says about Apollonia 6. Quote: "In which our heroine fucks the principal, opens up her pretty boy, sings quite a bit, and talks cute rather than dirty. The tracks are more than serviceable Star Company issue. The formula is less than Kiki Shock. B minus."
Okay, so slightly lower than how he graded Vanity 6.
Yeah, but like B minus, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, he graded, it was B plus for the Vanity 6 project. So, yeah. Okay.
Pretty good. So those are our facts and figures on Apollonia 6.
I love it.
And here we go.
We gonna do it?
One. We're doing it.
Okay.
We're doing it. Track number one. Clem, what's his name? Fandango. Clem Fandango, what's your opinion on track number one? Happy Birthday, Mr. Christian.
Christian, what do we gonna do?
Ed, did you ever watch Mutiny on the Bounty?
You ever I have see not.
That? Or one of there's a few versions of it. Okay. Mm-mm. The hero's name is Mr. Christian.
Oh yeah. Give me a little dialogue with Mr. Christian. Isn't there a little like walking on the bow? Mr. Christian, rah, 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 rah. I need this, Mr. Christian. Bow up, Mr. Christian.
I think you got it. I think you nailed it. I mean, for someone who's never seen the movie, that's an incredibly accurate representation of what happens in it.
There's an instinct in here, a writer's instinct that I can't really put my finger on.
You can't stop instinct.
You can't.
No, you got to trust it. What do you think of this track, opening track, Happy Birthday, Mr. Christian?
I'm very intrigued by this track.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's very interesting. I don't think anything else sounds like this in Prince's catalog. Like, this is a really odd track to me. It almost, to me, feels like the sound of it and style of it sounds almost like Euro pop. I actually wrote down Psychedelic Furs. Like, if...
Oh, interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now that you say that, I hadn't thought that, but now that you say that,
It's like very Europop, 80s, like early 80s Europop, Psychedelic Furs sound to it. Really odd. And then the storyline's really odd too.
I have a lot of thoughts about the storyline.
Yeah. So I'll sum it. Then I want to hear, of course, what you thought about that. So basically, the storyline is, and it's referenced a bit in the reviews that Jared just mentioned. It's about presumably Apollonia, whatever, high school student, developed a little, maybe bodily a little earlier than others. The principal was attracted to her. Apparently she has an affair with this principal over time, which is why not only does she just pass her classes, apparently she wasn't a particularly good student. She actually gets on the honor roll about this. Yeah. And then apparently they have a kid.
Yeah. They have a baby.
This is a really interesting storyline, plot line here. Do you want to comment? I felt like
Go ahead. I'll wait. Go ahead.
Yeah. So just curious about, I want to hear your take on it. And then there's this part at the end with the happy birthday. I'm really intrigued by using the happy birthday, Mr. Christian, as sort of the anchor for the track, because it plays with the very iconic Marilyn Monroe, happy birthday, Mr. President stuff, which is pretty, I think, ubiquitous. People know about that. Also, though, I think kind of geniusly brings attention to the age factor of the principal, presumably, who's much older, and Apollonia, who's in high school, or at least her character's in high school here. I'm just fascinated by this. I'm not sure if I love the song by any stretch. It just fascinates me. I'm just really intrigued by it. It's interesting because it's very much... how do I say this? It wouldn't be a song that I would go back and do a lot of repeated listens, except just because I'm curious about it and maybe you want to dig into it a little deeper. It's not like, oh my God, it's so catchy, it's so funky, it's so whatever, label it whatever way you want. I want to come back and listen to it. It's just an interesting amalgamation of things. A lot of synth here, really hardly any guitar. That's why I'm, again, sensing this Euro pop kind of feel to it. So it lacks a distinctive Prince stamp to it, though. Like if you just played this,
I don't know that I agree. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh yeah, and I want to hear what you have to say about that. Because I think if you played this for me blindly, and I mean, I could probably tell it was Apollonia's voice just because I know Apollonia from "Take Me With You" and other things, and "Sex Shooter." I don't know if I would have known on the first listen. I feel like I have you talk about instinct. I feel like I can hear a second of a song and know it's like a Prince track based on just the way he writes his songs and how they're produced. I don't know if I would have known that here with this particular track.
Okay.
So I want to hear what you have to say about it. What were your thoughts?
Well, let's talk about the lyrical content first.
Sure.
Let me start there. So yeah, as you said, it's a narrative about a high school girl who essentially has an affair with her principal, right? That's the long and the short of it. Now, tell me how this rings with you. I think this is right. So when she's saying happy birthday, Mr. Christian, I presume she's saying it's because it's her birthday and she's now 18. So now she's legal.
Oh, I didn't go there at all. That's interesting.
That's because now, but here's the problem, right? She repeatedly sings that, you know, okay, they have a son together, all that stuff. But he wants a teenage pastime and she wants a love that's true. That makes me think, in other words, now that she's 18, she's too old for him.
Oh, that's, could be.
He doesn't want her now because now she's too old. And it also sounds like she's the one who initiated it. As the line says, I took him to his office when, and then the lunch bell rang, and like, she's the one who did this thing. Now, did she do that to get good grades, or did she do that because she liked Mr. Christian?
A little fuzzy there.
There's also she plays on the, you know, the lyrical plays on, you don't act like your name. You don't act very Christian.
Right.
There's all that. Okay. And then there's also, I think this is sort of typical Prince fantasy. This bit about how the teenage girl in this story seems to be the expert in sex right away, right? She's giving him lessons.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He gives her A's, right? So that's interesting. So yeah, the impression I'm getting is that she initiated this affair. He dives in wholeheartedly, gives her good grades. She gets pregnant, has the baby, turns 18. Now they can be together, but now he wants nothing to do with her because she's too old.
That's, folks, you want to see Jared's writing just illustrated quickly and thinking right there. Boom. I even went to a darker place because we'll talk about, I'll talk about this in various tracks on this particular album. He seems to be in love with the drum kit sound that sounds like a gunshot.
Yeah, he does.
And there's a sequence in the song where I thought, is it his birthday and he's broken up with her? And she sings that, it's the last time I think they sing the chorus.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Mr. Christian, something, something, something. And then at the end, it's like, it sounds like gunfire going off.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm like, did she show up at his birthday and was like, okay, Mr. Christian, you're leaving me, whatever, like it's over. Well, I'll show you over.
Well, if that's true, and it could be, if sort of the end of the story is she's shown up at school with a gun.
Oh boy.
Now that's, you know, that's our,
that's mind. Going real dark. Yeah. Or someplace.
But who's to say that's not possible? I mean, I'll say this, that this is a dark story, no matter what way you cut it.
Yeah.
But it's lyrically more complex, in my opinion, than anything on Vanity Six, with the possible exception of 3 × 2 = 6.
I agree.
Maybe this is a prequel to that song. 3 × 2 = 6. I don't know.
Here's the other question. Is Mr. Christian the father of Annie Christian from the Controversy album?
Oh, wow. That's interesting, though.
I think it's probably true.
Could be true. Ed's shaking his own head.
My own head saying
I think that's a fun idea. Now I'm going to differ from you musically. I do feel like this is sort of given what you just said, you're going to slap me when I say this. I feel like this is sort of primetime Prince in that 1999 Purple Rain pocket. This song feels like it's related to Something in the Water to me.
I'm not seeing it, but go ahead. Go for it. I'm not seeing it.
Sonically. I mean, I get what you're saying about sort of the Euro pop of it all, but I also think that heavy synth sound.
Yeah.
You know, he was a forerunner of that. It was so prevalent at the time. I don't know. I feel like this is in that kind of pocket. I like how the music bounces along with that hint of something darker underneath it. It feels lush. It feels very lush and full, more so than you would think a mostly electronic track should. And to me, that says that at this point, Prince had gotten better and better and better. I mean, as we know that he did, but you know, those early electronic pieces of his, they're so minimal, right? They're so sparse. This feels much more full, which says, oh, we're seeing his confidence and his ability with this kind of stuff growing in real time. I think it's a pretty strong album opener, especially when you consider the complexity of the lyrical content. Also, just by way of, I think it's interesting, it's the longest track on the album by a bit. It's over 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long track.
It's long. So it takes its time telling this complicated story, and I'm really intrigued by it.
All right, let's move on then. Track number 2, the one we probably all know. It's called Sex Shooter.
Trigger, babe, I can't do it alone. Jared, you familiar with six shooters?
Are you a 12 gauge guy?
Oh, it's 12 gauge or nothing. Because what are you going to do? I mean, look, when the zombies come,
yes,
and we all know that they're coming. I feel like that six shooter, unless your aim is really dead accurate, you're going to have trouble taking down those zombies, shooting them in the head.
And it's well known that zombies typically run around in packs of 12. Normally. So like, are you going to bring a six shooter to a 12 person?
I mean, what challenge? Are you going to do? You're just asking for trouble. Folks, let me ask you this question. How do you think Ed and I will do when the zombie apocalypse happens? Do you think we'll fare well? Do you think both of us will make it? Let us know in the comments.
I had a weird vision of, do you remember Arachnophobia?
Sure.
Remember when the guy jumped into the web and was like, come on, everybody, eat me, whatever he did with the spiders. I could see myself like numbing myself. I'm just like going out into the road and just falling over and being like, guys, just go for it. There's not a lot of brain here for everybody. Listen, it's more of an appetizer than anything else. What do you think about Sex Shooter?
Well, lyrically, I think this fits in pretty well with what we heard on Vanity Six. It feels like the sister song to Nasty Girl, sort of. And like Nasty Girl, this has a groove. It has that, into my ear, it has that slight hint of disco in it, combined with Prince's, you know, futuristic pop. I'll say, though, this sort of struck my ear. I'll say this. When you think about Prince editing his lyrics, if he does it at all, especially when he gives these songs to other people, particularly women, you wonder why he didn't change Come On, Kiss the Gun. That feels a little on the nose, masculinity-wise. But regardless of a lack of subtlety, I like this tune. I don't know. I think there are more interesting tracks in this album, but I like this a lot. And also, I'll just say that there is an extended version of this track, which I also found access to, which is almost 7 minutes in length, that's out there if folks want to hear it. So I like Sex Shooter. I don't have a ton to say about it because I don't think there's a ton to say about it. But maybe you feel differently.
No, I'm with you. I mean, yeah, it feels to me like a little bit of it, because I am a big fan of Nasty Girl. It felt like a little bit more of a watered down attempt.
I agree.
Accomplish what was accomplished with Nasty Girl. I do love the drum effect. I was trying to search. I know there's a, I don't know what it's called, the fader, whatever that sound is. It's same sound that's on She's Always in My Hair. Which kind of drives the percussion for the track. I always love that sound. You know, the synth hooks, irresistible, that little dit-dit-dit-dit, very Minneapolis sound. I think I might have been reviewing the extended version. To our point, to Jared's point earlier, I don't have this, like, I'm online trying to find these songs, so I'm finding different compilations. I might have been reviewing a longer version of it, because I said I have fun little guitar solo, which I think is only in that extended version.
Correct.
It's not in the album version. I mean, I think it's a fine track. I think it's a catchy track. It just doesn't have that shape, that slinky, sharp edge that, say, Nasty Girl has. You know, it's very competent sounding, like a sound song that it's like light enough to float above the tide, but like it's not like a standout track in my mind in terms of the overall Prince canon, even in the protege land.
Oh, I agree. Universe. Yeah, I agree.
It's fine enough, but it's not like,
I don't know. Yeah, it's fine enough. All right, track number three, just about halfway through this record. Oh, man, you've got to love these short records. track number three, this is titled Blue Limousine. Ed, why be clever here? No need to be clever. Ever been in a limousine?
Yeah, I've been in a limo. How about you?
Yeah, how was it? Was it a nice experience? I don't think I've ever been in one.
Like even at a, like in a participating in a wedding or something where like we're in a limo.
Oh,
like,
you know what? Oh, you know what? Now that you say that, I guess I must have been. I don't have any real memory of it, though.
To your point, you maybe you're getting at this. I've never been like limo service for Ed Miller yet.
Right. Right. Yet. Later today.
Later today. When we get invited to Paisley.
How do you like this track? Is it does it make you blue? Does it make you sad? Or does it is it a happy limousine?
It's an okay. Like, I mean, it's, I don't know if I would turn down the ride altogether, but it's not like my preferred way to travel.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm.
So I really love, there's a really great thumping bass, but it's kind of down low in the mix.
Yeah, it's a little low. Yeah.
I wish it was popping a little more. And folks, this is where it's interesting to me. You mentioned the Revolution was involved, and I know Brown Mark gets a credit for like backing vocals, but if super freaky Purple fans will recall that there's sort of a unreleased live compilation out there. It's Prince's Birthday from June 7th, 84. It's a classic like bootleg, and they play Roadhouse Garden on that, which is great. And Brown Mark, like who I was always like, he's a bass player, whatever. He's slapping the hell out of that bass in that live stuff.
Yeah.
It sounds almost identical. Like, I'm wondering, like, did Brown Mark really play this? And, or is he just, you know, maybe Prince? He's just playing what Prince told him to play, which is fine. But it just reminded me of that Roadhouse Garden kind of thumping pluck bass that he plays there. Cool rhythm guitar. It's surprisingly poppy to me, though, overall, the track. Some cool synth breaks. Again, if I think the thing for me for this album in a lot of ways, it sounds like other material of the time. So it doesn't have a distinctive quality to me. I wrote down, I am the warrior. Remember that song? I am the warrior.
Yeah. Was that Scandal? Was the name
Scandal.
Of that
thank you. I couldn't think of who they were. It reminds me of that. I mean, Brenda's showing some chops here. She can sing. That Brenda can sing. And again, I mentioned about him using that gunshot drum sound. Like it's very prominent in this song. Hints at. That's going to be used very prominently in the track America very shortly when he releases Around the World in a Day. I think the song could have ended 2 minutes earlier, too. I think it kind of goes on and on. And like that chorus line about my baby, something by the blue limousine, I don't particularly love the chorus line, like the verse, how it's the melody of it. And that's kind of the anchor of it. And it's just repeated for another like 3 minutes at the end of the song. And it could have ended 2 minutes earlier. So it's an okay track. I don't hate it. I think it could have been shorter. I probably would have appreciated it more if it was a little more tight in terms of how it was edited on the album.
Well, I got to tell you, this is really interesting because I really dig this track. I like it a lot. I do. Yeah, I really like the music on this. There's a sweepingness to it, if that makes sense. There's a sense of scale, I think. But what to me is interesting about that is that the story of this song is fairly small, right? A woman waiting for her ride.
Right.
Prince does that lyrical thing here that he does from time to time, where he counts things down hyper specifically in almost real time. So like first verse is it's 7:30, then it's 7:31, then it's 7:32. She's looking at her watch as she's waiting for this limo to arrive. And unlike you, I actually like how the chorus is essentially just one line. I think it's unique in that. It's just that, you know, I'm waiting for my baby in his blue limousine. I think that's pretty interesting. Give me the time and then just that one line. And I think that's a curious sort of factor. Now, I agree with you. This is pretty long. It's over 6 minutes in length. So to me, and I think you probably would agree with this, this is a track that's built for the club, right? It's built for the dance floor. It's built for people to just sort of lose themselves into the groove of it. But I do like the groove, and it pulses in a way that appeals to me. I'm surprised that this one doesn't appeal to you more, actually.
It doesn't. I'm not lying when I say it doesn't.
Liar! J'accuse! Anyway, I like it. That's my take on the blue limousine.
All right. Thanks, Jared, for that inaccurate representation of the track. Let me move on.
Yeah, please.
Side two, folks, already. Woo! We're going to move from a blue limousine, and we're going to drive it a million miles. Parentheses, I love you. I'll give that demonstrate the way you make me feel. Karen, it's been well documented in various music about walking. Maybe I will walk 500 miles, a million miles, a million days. Prince sings about at some point. What's the distance you would walk for love?
I want to add another song to that mix that I would guess you probably don't know, but there was a great Irish sort of like, he was sort of like an Irish Stevie Ray Vaughan. His name was Rory Gallagher. You ever hear of him?
No, I don't know him. No.
He was an incredible guitar player, and he has an amazing song called A Million Miles Away.
Okay.
And there's also, remember that Plimsoll song, that 80s song? A million miles.
Oh, yeah. Now that you said that, yeah. That's a great little track. Yeah.
All that being said, how far is Harrisburg from Philly? How many miles?
Might be 90 miles, 90-ish.
Yeah, 90-ish miles. Yeah, that's too far.
Yeah, take the train.
Take the train. I like this track. What? I like this track a lot. There's an urgency to it right away that appeals to me. It feels kind of desperate, which makes sense when you consider the lyrics. It's a story of a protagonist who is listing all the things that she would do, climb, like, and asking of her opposite, you know, would you climb mountains, swim seas, the usual. But then lyrically, it gets much more interesting. Would you eat the poisoned apple?
I wrote that down. I love that line. That's really cool.
Much more interesting things, to be frank. Very curious. We also get a touch of some funk guitar and some funk bass, which is great to hear. Jazzy little piano solo, which is credited to Lisa. Although I don't know if it's her, but that's who it's credited to. And that's kind of a delight. And then a full-on Sheila E. drum solo, which is banging. Incredible stuff. But the way this tune drives forward really appeals to me. And this is Brenda singing lead, with, I think, Jill Jones doing the primary backup here. And Prince is on this. Prince's vocal.
Yeah.
Is
on. Yeah. You're not hiding.
So this is nearly a full-on Revolution track. Everybody's playing on this. And honestly, I think this probably should have been saved for the Revolution. I think this is a great song. I love the feel of it. And I know you and I have differed on this, but so far, this whole album is a winner for me, honestly, so far.
What the hell is going on over there?
I know. What do you make of A Million Miles?
No, I like it. First off, great bass again. Really, really great bass.
Really great bass. Really
to your point, I wrote Sheila shines on this. Sheila's drumming on this is fantastic. And I know you have a particular fondness for this because that keyboard sound is so Joe Jackson stepping out. You can't deny it. That's what you're hearing. That's why you love it. There's some of that. Also, I love the drum fill. There's that little drum fill that's played throughout the track, which is fun. I wrote about the, would you eat a poison apple? That line certainly popped for me. I thought that was really, really cool. There's a little teeny tiny piano solo, which is cool. And I love hearing Prince. Just hearing his voice for a minute makes the track exciting to me, where he's saying, somebody clap your hands. I think that's really fun. So generally, I think this is a really cool track. It reminded me, but again, this is where I think I'm struggling a little bit, not sharing the same level of love that you have, it seems, for this album. It reminded me in style and sound of Tina Marie's Lover Girl of that same era, which was a big hit for Tina Marie. So again, like, I think these are great. These are really good songs, but they don't, to me, sound distinctive enough. Like they sound like other songs of that era. Like this one I like a lot, but it reminds me of Lover Girl from Tina Marie, which predates the song, I believe. So anyway, I dig it. I think everything you said is on the money about, and I love the players on it. And I believe, and this raises a question I wanted to, maybe I'll throw in now. I believe Wendy and Lisa wrote this primarily. So could you imagine if there was a universe where Prince would have allowed Wendy and Lisa to be the artistic drive behind, whether he didn't want them to be the leads of the female group, but maybe there's a female group put together where they drove the material and produced the material in the Prince universe. Think about that for a second.
Well, I think you and I have sort of had thought experiments in the past about this. And for one thing, Wendy and Lisa would never have agreed to do you know, all the lingerie blank sex. No,
I think they'd have
stuff.
To be behind the scenes. They'd be writing and producing, not necessarily starring.
They'd be writing and producing. I mean, and again, we've said this too, as much as we love Prince's post-revolution output, and there's a lot of tremendous stuff in there. In my estimation, Wendy and Lisa are the only artistic forces in the entirety of his career that had the capacity to push back and to challenge him, and also to present him with material that he thought was worthy enough to tackle. Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a difficult thing to manage over the span of, you know, a 40 plus year career, for sure. But I think if he and Wendy and Lisa could have worked it out, you know, and as we talked about before, you know, the two parties were blaming each other and, like, you know, so forth and so on. But I think the history of Prince and pop music, as profound as it is now, would have been even different. It would have been different. It would have been
certainly would have been different. Yeah, absolutely.
It would have been different. And I think it's possible, maybe, that if he had managed to keep them on board, maybe he wouldn't have been as lost in the wilderness as he was for a stretch there.
That's, you make a good point, but I'll say this, like, as much as I love the revolution, if you're saying Wendy and Lisa stick around and we don't get, say, Sign of the Times, I would say, sure. Well, it's time for him to change and move on and go in a different direction. Sure. So.
And I think it's impossible to assume that, I mean, an artist has to change.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's unfair and unreasonable to assume too, that Wendy and Lisa would be content in being, you know,
agreed,
heated from the spotlight all those years.
Sure.
You know, but regardless, it's an interesting thought experiment.
Yeah.
You know, and you wonder what that Roadhouse Garden album would have sounded.
I know, man. Listen, when you and I go to the Airbnb in Mini and we're like, we're having dinner with the two of them, we'll talk.
Wendy and Lisa. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Talk. Next track.
Next track, we have a tune that's titled Ooh, She, She, Wah, Wah. I'm the one that you ooh, I'm the one that you ooh, I'm the one that you want. I'm the one that you want. Hear me now. Ooh. Ed, as you know, we have listeners around the world.
That's true.
And we're grateful for every one of y'all. Thanks for listening. And whatever far-flung place you're from, well, far-flung to us. For you, it's home. But for us, it's far-flung. But wherever you're listening right now, we are grateful for that. I don't know, Ed, how many people outside of even our neck of the woods are familiar with Wawa. Could you explain to the listeners at large what Wawa is and the love of that institution that we all have in this state?
Many religions speak of an afterlife.
Yeah.
I have to think if you were to conjure up an idea of paradise, it would be something called a Wawa, which is generally a place you can stop in. There's a family. It's like a family. It's like a family of folks. You stop and get gas. You can, you know, fill up the tank, so to speak.
Fill up your tires with air if you need.
And it was, you know, listen, it started humbly as like many convenience stores, which are just not, you know, not unique to the US or unique. They're across the globe. So stop in, quick, fuel up, grab, quick bite, go. But now Wawa's have expanded, and this idea of convenience stores in the US, I'm sure we're doing it bigger and larger because that's our typical way to do things. You go in and it's like you can have a full dinner in there now. You can hoagies. Their hoagies are really good, folks. Hoagies are like these delicious little sandwiches with nice different sliced meats and things. They have that. What's that thing? Hoagie. What's it called each year? They do a hoagie fest. Hoagie fest.
Oh, hoagie fest. Yeah.
Hoagie fest each year. Yeah. Yeah, but I have to say, living here now, Jared's in Philly, as we've well established. I'm about 2 hours west of Philadelphia in Harrisburg. There's something called Sheetz out here, and there is this sort of rivalry that kind of starting to sprinkle around.
A new rivalry.
Wawa, Sheetz, Rutter's, which is another one. And I think at some point there are going to be some Buc-ee's coming up here, which Buc-ee's is its own universe. It's kind of crazy.
Well, listen, we're Wawa for life in this neck of the woods. That's what we do. It's a convenience store / restaurant / fast food place / gas station / as Ed said, a little slice of heaven on earth. So Wawa, look it up, folks. You won't regret it. What do you think of this track? Is it as heavenly as a Wawa convenience store is?
I struggled with this one a little bit. This is the one that sounds the most like the natural either relationship back to the Vandy Six project, right? Because it's straight ahead new wave with a bouncy synth bass, very funky synth bass line, and Susan kind of talk rapping through it. I think it drives. I mean, I do like his how he was creating these new wave tracks in that early 80s period. So I dig it. I'm glad that Susan gets a feature somewhere on this album. So I'm appreciative of that. I really love that slowdown. That surprised the hell out of me. I was not expecting her to just say, let's slow it down. And it slows down. There's like this kind of chant. I kind of dig that. It was very surprising to me because I thought it was going to be a straightforward, just new wave synth driving song. And then I have this interesting, I don't know where this popped in my head, Jared. So we're talking about universes and things. In another universe, this is a hit country song. I could see this being rearranged and maybe slowed down just a little bit, and it could actually play as a country song and be a hit. So, I mean, is it my favorite song? No. Does it feel like right for Apollonia 6 based on the Vanity project it came from? Yes. Do I like that Susan's on it? I do. So I'll leave it there. What did you think of it? I have a feeling you did not like the song. I feel like you hated the song.
So if you recall that on the last track, I said, this whole album is a winner for me so far.
Oh boy.
I started my notes on this one saying, and I spoke too soon.
Oh boy. Yep. Here we go. I knew it.
As you said, this has a spoken word component, one of Prince's patented little scenarios. It's a goofy friends getting ready to go out, talking about Neptune and the, like, you know, all this weird sort of goofy stuff. And then it drops into what I don't hear that country thing at all that you're talking about. I'm hearing a post-punk rave kind of tune, almost aggressive in its feel. It feels to me like a companion piece to Makeup, which is maybe why you're talking about it being related to Vanity Six.
Yep.
It has another Prince, you know, patented thing of the flat female vocalizations, almost robotic, not quite, complete with a screeching synth solo. Susan, as you said, Susan Moonzy gets this one. It's her only track on the entire album. I like this more than Makeup. But as I said, I feel like this is a kissing cousin, feel and sound wise. But this is not a favorite by any stretch.
Not your cup of tea.
Not my cup of tea.
Vicka. I'd shared with Jared after we had done the last pod. I did find on YouTube Brenda doing a track by track kind of review of Vanity Six. And the person interviewing them actually asked about this. You know, Jared had a big just conversation around the robotic sound of the voices. And Brenda, it actually came up on that review, and Brenda said, and listen to this, Jared, because I wasn't even thinking about this. When they recorded the Vanity Six album, Susan was 16 years old. 16 years old, Jared. And Prince asked the parents' permission to have Susan perform with Vanity Six, which they agreed to. And Brenda's point was, Susan sounded so much like a little kid that Prince directed her to sound a little differently to not make her sound so young. So for that particular, for her particular vocal, there was an intention on changing the affect of her voice because she sounded like a little kid, I think, was basically what I was getting from Brenda. So that was really interesting to hear that come directly from Brenda's mouth about that direction of vocal for specifically Susan.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking up some stuff here. Yeah, apparently she had an on again, off again romantic relationship with Prince, but I think a lot of those ladies did.
Yeah. Yep.
She's still down. She just turned 60.
There you go.
She just turned 60 in January.
Happy birthday, Susan.
Happy birthday to you, Susan.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Susan.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
All right. Should we move on maybe to the next track?
We should. Let us move on.
Next track is called Some Kind of Lover. I'd be remiss not to mention Billy Squire.
Your fucking hero, Billy Squire.
I love me some Billy Squire. Listen, the Town Squire pod is on its way, folks. We're starting to work out material for season one.
Squire. Oh, God, that's so good.
You know it. Did you like the In the Dark album? We'll just talk about it for a second. Some Kind of Lover, something like that.
I don't have nearly the repository of Billy Squire info at the ready like you have.
Might have had The Stroke on it, Some Kind of Lover on it, In the Dark. No.
Yeah, nothing. I got nothing.
Lonely is the Night.
I remember some, what was the Lover song called?
I think it's called Some Kind of Lover, I think.
Kind of Lover, is that the name of it? Yeah, I remember that tune. But that's all I got for you on Billy Squire.
All right. So those episodes, folks, I know you do enjoy our 2 hour pods for Prince. Those Billy Squire ones with including Jared's knowledge might be about 15, 20 minutes at the most.
Deep dives.
Shallow waters in the Squire universe. What do you think about this track, Some Kind of Lover?
Well, we have another spoken word intro. It sounds like, the girls of Apollonia 6 are like at a slumber party maybe. And Brenda is trying to talk to her man on the phone. I think that's what's happening. Does that sound right to you?
Sure.
Maybe something like that. And then the music kicks in with a deep funky bass line, which is a delight. And then this turns out to be in my opinion, a pretty bright R&B pop song with kind of a joyous chorus of You're Some Kind of Lover. There's nothing really lyrically interesting for me here, but I do like how it feels. It has a lot of air under it, lifts up, if that makes sense. There's a really nice little key solo with like flat float away is what I thought. It's solid R&B pop, and I think it works on the whole. You know, it falls nicely on my ear.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I like it. I think that, yeah, the bass is undeniably really, really good here.
Yeah, the
bass
is undeniable. Yeah.
Really good here. The bridge that leads into the chorus, it was very unexpected to me. It's hard for me to describe what's happening there, but it felt like it was going to be a pretty much straightforward funk track, given that bass, that solid bass foundation. But there's something that happens in the transition there, maybe the pre-chorus, that I just found very interesting in terms of melodically. I thought it was really cool. I felt like Morris could sing this. It felt like it could be a time song. Like it was, it just had that same foundation of it, the music of it. It sounds like there's live drumming on this track, which I kind of really dig, very different than what he's been doing in this era generally.
Yes.
So I found it very cool. I think it's really catchy. I think it is. There's a little piano in there kind of sprinkled in. It's funny. I thought for sure, Jared, without any doubt, you would say, the one thing I don't like about this track is at the end, they do this kind of seduction talk through piece. And I thought for sure you'd be like, I have no interest in that. So did that not hit your ear in any particular way? It didn't bother you, or it didn't matter one way or another?
You know what? It's interesting you say that. It just didn't, I don't know. I guess it didn't bother me. It didn't feel, maybe because it doesn't feel as prominent as like an International Lover does or something to that effect. So I think I just kind of ignored it, I guess. I was so focused on how the music felt that it just didn't register for me, really.
No, that sounds good. I'm not a huge fan of that. It just felt like, you know, we were talking about agency, and I don't want to get too deep on this here on this album. It's a very different type of album than, say, the Vanity Six Project in a lot of ways in terms of the material and is it X-rated versus PG-13, whatever.
Right.
But I do wonder if they, you know, Prince kind of prodded Brenda to do that piece. And then I'm wondering if that I'm embarrassed that he included was like authentic. Like she did the take and literally just said, I'm just so embarrassed to do this. And he said, let's leave it in. Let's leave it into the recording, which I think is kind of awesome, actually, if that's what happened there. So I think this is a really, really cool track. Her vocal here, see what you feel, how you feel about this, the quality of it, the kind of energy behind it. It reminded me oddly of like if Patti Smith would have done an R&B track, it might have sounded something like this. So that caught my ear. So yeah, generally, I think this is a kind of a cool track.
I agree. All right, here we have our final track on the Apollonius 6 self-titled album. This is titled In a Spanish Villa.
Casarme contigo? Ni sé cómo te llamas. A ver, dime cómo te llamas. Oliver? Un nombre muy bonito. Me gusta. Dame un beso, Oliver. Sí, está bien. En mis labios. ¿En dónde más?
Ed, let me ask you this. Does the rain in Spain fall mainly on the Maine?
Well, when I'm going over there on my plane.
Right.
Rather than say that I'm being too vain. Because I could easily, I couldn't take a train, let's be honest. That would be insane. I don't know. I'm not sure. Woo-wee! A.
I wanted to see how long you go.
Yeah, A material, friends, always. We always do that.
It's always A plus. What do you make of this track? It's not really a song.
Yeah.
It's a little, anyway, go ahead.
Look, there's not much to say about this. I'm like, well, why shouldn't Apollonia have her chili sauce moment in Spanish? I mean, do it. Why not? Right. That chili sauce, as you folks know, on the Times album of the same era, which is spoken word by Morris. To me, I mean, this is very different. It's not that slow burn ballad, and there's not much happening. It's her speaking in Spanish. Did you do the translation, Jared?
I did. I do. I have it here.
Okay, I'll let you reference it. I think it's interesting that there's an Oliver character in this because of Oliver's house from the that we'll be hearing very shortly. But yeah, I mean, there's not much going on. Even the rap's not that particularly deep. Is this a seduction rap? But I gotta say, Prince throwing some Santana guitar in here.
I wrote the same thing.
It's pretty fucking awesome.
I wrote that this whole track is an excuse for Prince to play a Santana style solo. That's what I have.
Absolutely. Here. And yeah. I have no doubt. I feel like, and I'm kind of showing my hand with the album. I feel like Prince just like walked in one day and said, let me just plug in and play. And he did it like one time and walked out the door. Yeah. Like, I don't, like, yeah. he just like, let me yeah. just, I'll just rip this real quick and record it. And let's move on to something else. But it's fun. Like there's some, because that's the one thing generally here. Like there's not a lot of solo stuff happening in terms of instruments on this, any of these collections, the Vandy Six or the Apollonia Six collection, not a lot of, besides maybe the bass, which pops, but not a lot of solos happening generally.
Right.
So it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. It's nothing, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. And I agree with everything you just said. I'll just, for people who are curious, here's what the translation is of this very short little story that's in Spanish. It is, according to what I found, it says this, and you tell me that if you found something different. Why are you sitting so far away? Come here, I'm not going to bite you. Ha ha, honey, aren't you warm? Come here, take that off. Oh, see, you feel better, no? What should we talk about? Are you lonely? Why are we talking about such sad things? I'm never lonely. Well, sometimes. No, it's okay. Please take my hand. Well, I know that one day the man of my dreams will come for me. That's how it will be. Ah, yes, I know how to cook real deliciously. What? Marry you? I don't even know your name. Well, let's see. Tell me, what is your name? Oliver? A very pretty name. I like it. Give me a kiss, Oliver. Yes, it's okay. On my lips. Where else? Well, goodbye, Oliver. It was a pleasure meeting you. Goodbye.
There it is.
There it is.
And I would say for all our Spanish listeners, probably a very typical conversation in any Spanish villa in that country.
I'm sure every Spanish villa sounds, yeah, that's all you can do in a Spanish villa. Ed, what is your favorite track on Apollonia 6?
Yeah, I was between Some Kind of Lover and A Million Miles, but I think at the end, I'd say A Million Miles.
Yeah, I also have A Million Miles. Happy Birthday, Mr. Christian is a close second for me.
Gotcha. I know you like it. I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's your least favorite?
Another one I was debating between Ooh Shishi Wa and In a Spanish Village, not necessarily because I don't like them, but like what doesn't quite fit the sound of the album, because like Ooh Shishi Wa Wa is very Vanity Six sounding. In a Spanish Village is like its own thing altogether. But I'm going to actually cut, and I know, because I will hear great Prince guitar in the future. I'm going to cut In a Spanish Village just because I really want Susan to have a track. Really badly. And I hate the idea of this album not having Susan singing something. So that's the reason I would pick In a Spanish Village over Ooh Shishi Wa Wa.
That's very fair. I'm sorry, Susan. I'm totally dropping you from this record.
I knew you would. No surprise.
What's the most interesting track?
Happy Birthday, Mr. Christian, of course.
It's got to be Mr. Christian.
Absolutely.
And what's your favorite musical moment?
This, I think, is telling, and I think I had the same struggle in the Vanity Six. It tells you about the material here. I had trouble thinking of a great musical moment because there's just not a lot of solos and things happening here. However, I guess if I was to, there's two things I would say. One is I really, again, just because I was surprised, I really liked that slowdown feature in Ooh Shishi Wa Wa when she tells it, because I just came out of nowhere, left field, and I thought that was just such a left turn. It really surprised me, and I dug it. And it was just really nice to hear Prince come into A Million Miles and say, somebody clap your hands. Just hearing his voice made me go, like, it felt like it elevated the song by, like, 8 notches just to hear him in there. Yeah. So, how about you?
Sure. I think it's got to be that Sheila E. drum solo on A Million Miles. That's my favorite moment.
There you go.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, Ed, give us your overall impression, and then give us your Prince symbol rating.
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting album. I have to say, maybe not to the extent that Goldie's Parade reviewed and said, hey, I underestimated this album for years and now it's better. I certainly came into this album with low expectation. I just felt like, yeah, you know, I still think this is a bit of a throwaway album for Prince. I think Prince, you know, we've talked about it. He pulled some amazing music out of this project and put it in other places like Manic Monday, 17 Days, Take Me With You. It just speaks to what a genius he was, that even where I do think these were kind of like his tracks, they're actually pretty fucking good. Like, it's not like this is a bet. The 1.5 that Rolling Stone rated it, I think, is ridiculously low. I don't think, yeah. I still think the Vanity Six project is a more telling testament to where he's heading musically, with the way he produced that album and the music and the sound of it. Here, I feel like it was a little more poppy, and more poppy than I appreciate. I know you really liked the fuller production of things here. I love him when he's sparse. That's the sound of Prince that I dig, when he's minimal in his production. So I think this is better than I was expecting it to be. I don't think it's like a home run Bryce Harper, you know, take the lead type of thing. But I would say I would give it 3.25 stars for what it is. I think it's a solid one. And I say if you're for Vanity Six, I say you should really get that, because it really shows a bridge between Dirty Mind and 1999. Here, if you're a completist, I would say I'm going to go out and probably get this album just because I think there are some decent tracks on it, but it's not to the extent that I would say I liked Vanity Six and what the music was there. That's how I feel about it.
Sure. I think that's more than fair. I will say that this record surprised me. You might not be surprised to hear this. I like this much more than Vanity Six.
Yeah, I thought you'd go there.
I think the songs on the whole are structurally superior. To your point exactly, I think the music is more full. I think it's more lyrically interesting on the whole. And I'm gonna push back on you a little bit. I think, as much rightly, we think that Vanity Six fills in a puzzle piece between that Dirty Mind 1999 era. This is, I don't think this is a throwaway. I think this is an essential component to the 1984 Purple Rain, Ice Cream Castle, Prince trying to rule the world moment. I think it's a must listen for that full picture, and how Prince was kind of firing at all cylinders at this moment. That's not to say every song here is a 5-star gem. It's not, but I think it's really worth your time, if you've not heard it, to listen to it in the context of that era. So I'm not going to give this 4, because to me 4 is again like, you know, the Gold Experience or Around the World in a Day or Parade. So I'm giving this 3 3.25 principles.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. It's funny you say that, because I was trying to consider it in the way you just described it, and I couldn't quite get my head there, because a lot of the material was written post Purple Rain. And to me, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's a bridge to Around the World in a Day, but it's definitely, he's moving in a different direction. You could start hearing a little more pop, a little bit more. If Manic Monday was here, you would certainly be hearing that poppy kind of 60s psychedelicas type of sound. So there is a hint of it here. I hear what you're saying, though. I can see where you would really appreciate this album, especially compared to the Vanity Six album we just reviewed. So I'll give you that.
And I mean, imagine, again, a thought of experiment, but let's say, and we talked about this, but like, let's say that we took off Ushiwawa and In a Spanish Villa and put on Manic Monday in 17 Days. This would be a 5-star banger.
I can't imagine this project if you include Take Me With You. Let's say Take Me With You's in there. Take Me With You, Manic Monday, 17 Days, A Million Days.
Yeah.
Some Kind of Lover. Happy Birthday, Kind of Lover, Mr. Christian.
I mean, I don't know. This would be an all-timer, but that didn't happen. So it didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought experiment.
Cool.
All right. Now we will
Vicar.
Dig, if you will, the picture.
What do you make of this picture?
This is actually a little fascinating to me, because it's sort of like, it's a combination. First of all, it's similar in some ways to the Vanity Six cover. It's the three of them. They're lingerie'd out. However, where I was commenting on the Vanity Six project, looks like we interrupted them and they were pissed off that we were bothering them. It's much more it's much more come hither look on Apollonia's face in this picture. They're kind of in a triangle, a very classic kind of blocking, or what do you want to say, positioning. And Apollonia, as you would expect, in the front. Behind them is a weird mix of kind of pastel colored. It's a mix of like blocks, but it kind of hints of a city skyline, kind of.
Oh,
and then the Apollonia font is almost like It reminded me oddly, Joe, I don't know if you if this hit your brain at all. It reminded me oddly of, remember the movie BC?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It has that kind of
I said,
I'm sorry, you froze there for a second on the Zoom. Oh. It reminded me of the font that they use for sort of those throwback like cave person movies, right? So I don't know what, I don't know if there's anything it's not that great of a cover. Listen, it looks cheesy as all can be, but like I'm intrigued by it because there seems like there's a little more thought going into this that I'm not sure what he was trying to get at with the image. If it's like come into our new this sort of weird new world that's a throwback, yet it's futuristic, yet it's something. I don't know. But maybe I might be giving it more credit than it's due. What do you think of it?
I think I appreciate you giving it so much thought. I mean, I think this is just sort of a variation on the Vanity Six album cover. I will say, though, I mean, considering what you just told me about Susan and how she was so young when this started,
yeah,
that she's on the cover in her lingerie holding a teddy bear.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know about that. It's a little creepy. Let's move on to
a question for you.
Question for you,
Vika.
To the question of you.
Can you hear me, Jared?
Can you hear me? Hello, Vika.
Now question for your time. Yeah, let's talk about this. This is cool, I think. This is a nice little tie-in. We were talking about the last track in A Spanish Village. You and I both, I knew we were both going to nail this, that, oh my God, Santana. Right?
Right.
So here we go. What? Oh, this is the great, I love this when the universe does this for us. What is, name the 1991 movie Apollonia was in that's also a name of a Santana song.
Oh, I love it. Tell us that movie, folks. What is the name of that movie that Apollonia was in that's also the title of a Santana song? Let us know on Facebook. Let us know on Instagram. Let us know at whendovespodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from all of you. So that's it for this week's episode of When Doves Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
We're not going to be here with a full episode next week because it's Memorial Day weekend and sure folks will be out and about doing various things. But we might have a little secret bonus for you all, right, Ed?
Yeah, a little special gift from the When Doves Podcast family here. A little fun, little extra bonus pod.
Really fun, weird little thing. So that'll be in the mix. And then after that, we'll be back with what album, Edward?
Let's do the family.
We're going to do the family, a notable Prince side project. If for no other reason, you've heard us talk about this before, it's the original officially released version of Nothing Compared to You is on that record.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be a really good cover. So we hope you'll join us for that. And we hope everyone is well. And until then, we say,
may you
live to
see
the
Dawn, Vika.
The Dawn, Vika.
Cheerio, all good friends.
A new
friends.
Novel. Cheerio, all.
Cheerio. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.